It's the highway that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66.
This is Steve Dale's Other World. In the studio with me right now is Chicago's queen of traffic, Roz Varin, who's been on WLS-TV for...
38 and a half years. No, 28 and a half years.
Do people stop you on the street, and as they're driving even, stop and say, this lady can stop traffic?
No, but I do get recognized a lot at Costco. Don't ask me why.
It's because of those free samples that you're taking at lunchtime.
Yeah, eating my way through Costco, yeah.
Well, the name of the book, and it's the perfect name for a Roz Varin book, On the Road with Roz, Adventures in Travel and Life. You've had a very public life. I want to talk a bit about that, too. I want to go back a couple of years. How does one, I don't think, I have done, like you, I mean, people who do what we do,
right.
Interviewed probably thousands of people. For me, in the past 21 years, it's dog trainers, people who write books about dogs, veterinarians, etc. For you, I don't know, maybe people who fly helicopters over traffic. I've seen some of your TV reports. I don't think I've ever interviewed a traffic reporter. So do you wake up one day and say, I'd like to be a traffic reporter?
No. When people ask me why I chose traffic, I tell them that traffic chose me. Because it was kind of a job that I fell into. I graduated from Columbia College here downtown.
Uh-huh.
I'm from Chicago. I majored in radio. I did radio for 9 years before I worked at Channel 7, all in the Chicago market. And I really just wanted to be a DJ. And I guess maybe 6 months after I graduated, I found out there was a traffic service that was hiring, and they were looking. They had introductory level positions, and all you had to do was send in an air check, and if you didn't know traffic, they would train you.
And an air check is a little snippet of what you would do on the radio.
Exactly. So
and you were probably saying, and now here's Neil Diamond.
Something like that. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. But I did. I mean, I just sent in my regular, you know, audition tape, as it were, for radio, and they hired me. So that was in December of 1980. They trained me how to do radio traffic. And growing up in the northern suburbs, I did know my way around certain parts of Chicago. But, you know, anything like I-57, I'm like, where is that? I didn't know. So I did have to be trained. I did have to learn the entire metro area. And I worked for the service for a couple of years. And then I branched out. And I was doing traffic on US 99 when it was country with Don Wade before Don and Roma, and now Don Wade is gone. But I mean, That's how far back I go. But that was my first job working at a real radio station on my own, and worked at a couple of various other stations. I worked at WFYR, which is now Kiss FM. I mean, The call letters goes back many, many years. And at that time, in the late 80s, I heard that both Channel 5 and Channel 7 were going to start a morning newscast, and they wanted to incorporate traffic, which had not been done in television news. Hmm. It had always been done in radio.
Hmm.
So everybody who was doing traffic on the radio in Chicago auditioned for these jobs. And we were terrible because none of us knew what to do. I mean, if you don't know how to do chroma key, which is the green screen behind us where everything is superimposed, all the maps and such, it's backwards. It's like looking into a mirror and you're pointing at something and going, where am I pointing? I have no reference. So we were all terrible. And I did get called in at Channel 7, and I interviewed, and I did an audition, a live audition, and I froze. I was like a deer in headlights. I was just awful. And, of course, they turned me down. And I was so disappointed. I went home and had a good cry. And then I said, well, wait a minute. The people who are auditioning here were no better than I was. The only competition I have is myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to Columbia College to the head of the broadcast department, and I said, I need to make a TV audition tape. I don't know how to do this because all I've ever done is radio. So he put me in touch with some grads who had a little production studio in the south suburbs. I went out and stood on a bridge over the Bishop Ford Freeway, then the Calumet Expressway, and I did a traffic report. And then they sat me at a fake anchor desk, and I did a, like, back to you, Alan, and kind of turned and tossed and did what I thought they wanted to see. And I made this tape and I sent it back and I wrote this very eloquent letter saying, I know I don't have the television experience that the rest of your anchors do, but I bring you all this experience of knowing the Chicago expressways and the whole Chicago metro area, blah, 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 blah. And I promise you in a week I'll be just as good as anybody else. Had a lot of chutzpah. So Joe Ahern, who was the president general manager at the time, got this tape and read my letter, and a couple weeks later called me at the radio station. I get this phone call. It's Joe Ahern from ABC 7, Channel 7. And he said, be careful what you ask for. It might come true. I'm offering you a job.
Wow.
And then they trained me to be a reporter because I didn't report TV news. Very different than reporting radio news.
Sure.
Because when you're writing for radio, you have to come up with the imagery. But in television, you have to have the pictures.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I'm writing these stories, and they're like, well, what video do you have to support it? you know, so I had to learn how to do that. I followed Alan Krzyzewski around for a week. Huh. And then at the end of that week, they had me out on the Dan Ryan Expressway doing a package, a story, a rap,
as
you would in radio. And that was the first piece that I did on air. And the following Monday, which was April 3rd, 1989, that was the first day that ABC 7 had their morning newscast, half hour long. It was Alan anchoring, Jerry Taft doing the weather, and me doing the traffic. And it just kept expanding from there.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
I have several, but one is, does Roz Varen ever get lost?
Oh, sure.
In Chicago?
No. Well, I might. But I get very turned around when I travel. When I go to other cities, it's...
But you're not supposed to know other cities. You know Chicago. And, you know, the thing about you, what has happened over the course of years, in part, I suppose, it's your longevity. In part, it's you. Chicago's fallen in love with you.
Oh, you're so kind.
And you've been very honest on the air about everything happening in your life, whether it's about a dog, which we'll talk about in a moment, or if it's about you and your health. Were you surprised at the response that you received, which was overwhelming when you announced on the air? Well, I'll let you say it.
I was. This was in the summer of 2006. I was diagnosed stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. And this was before social media. So when I announced this on the air, I was inundated with emails, phone calls, everybody trying to get through to the station. They actually set up a separate email account where people could reach out to me. Thousands, thousands, and thousands.
Were you surprised?
Yeah, I was. I was.
I mean, so there's something more to Roz Varen than just someone up there presenting traffic. Do you know what that is?
No.
Do you know what I'm asking? So there are television personalities that are on for a certain number of years that people watch. They may like, they may not like. There's something about you that strikes at the core of the viewers.
You know, I think it's my honesty. Mm-hmm. Because I really am very close to my Facebook page. The running joke is, I want to be my Facebook personality. But you know what? I really am. I mean, that's all the best, the good parts of me. But sometimes there are the sad parts, too. And I'm very honest about that. And I think because I am so real when it comes to these things and people can relate to that, and I'm very approachable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when people come up to me in Costco and, hey, can we take a picture with you?
Well, I've been to events with you. I know.
Yeah.
So it clearly it took courage to stand up there and say, I have. And people still whisper cancer.
Oh, they do.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So did you see it as a courageous thing, or did you just say, I just talk about stuff in my life?
No, I don't think of it that way at all. I mean, other people will say it, like you will say that to me, but that's not why I did it. Part of it is therapeutic for me, because when I reach out to other people and we share these experiences, it helps me feel better about what I'm going through because I'm not alone.
Did it help?
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, it helps to this day when I talk about it on Facebook and I get a big response and I interact with people who are responding to me on social media. That is therapeutic to me. It works both ways.
And people going through it.
Absolutely.
I mean, you were an inspiration in several ways, but one way is which, all right, she's still working. And she's honest about every, you know, your appearance and all that. And you're still, you just went right through it and said, this is the step I'm taking now. No, now this is the step. Now this is the step.
Yeah.
And you were, I mean, we followed you. We were there with you. But for people who actually were going through cancer, they must have felt something.
When I was, just this past Sunday, and I did the official book launch, and I did a reading, and we did some Q&A afterwards, and there was a woman in the audience who was just recently diagnosed within the past 6 months, and she asked about that. What advice do you give people who are newly diagnosed with breast cancer, or any cancer for that matter?
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, my answer was, the initial diagnosis, at least for me, and a lot of people agree with me, is the worst part. Because your entire world is turned upside down. You get a cancer diagnosis and you're like, oh, what do I do now? Where do I go?
Sure.
Who's going to raise my kids? Who's going to help me? How am I going to get through this? Am I going to get through this? So until you really sit down with your doctor and get a second opinion and sometimes a third opinion and you come up with a plan, you feel out of control. But once you have that plan in place, whether it's chemo, radiation, surgery, whatever it is, you feel more in control of your health and your destiny. And it does get better.
Did you ever feel, you said, am I going to get through this? Did you ever feel that way?
Of course. I mean, you know, I'm 11 and a half years out, thank God. So it's not as challenging as it was in the first few years. Even one of the chapters in my book, when I talk about this and I say, I don't know if there'll be a point in time when a day goes by that I don't think about cancer.
Hmm.
But at this point in time, there are days that go by that I don't think about it. So I answered my own question. It took a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always going to be in the back of your mind and it can always come back. I never say I'm cured. I never say that I'm cancer, you know, I'm cancer free, but I'm in remission is really the way I like to put it, because at stage four, it can always come back.
Hmm.
So I just try to be healthy and try to keep the stress down. Because stress can really, that's really negative.
Why is
energy.
She doing this podcast then with stressful me?
No. Oh, gosh, no. You are not stressful.
The name of the book is On the Road with Roz, Adventures in Travel and Life. We're talking a little about life. I have one more life question to ask you, and you kind of answered this. So advice. You're diagnosed with something, anything. That is devastating to hear. What advice do you offer?
Don't be afraid to ask for help, especially with women. We tend to think we can do it all. We're strong. You know, I am woman. I can take care of my family, myself, this and that. Sometimes you can't, and people want to help. And don't be afraid to ask for help. I also
is that because women are brought up to take care of everybody else?
Could be. I don't know. I mean, I'm at that age where probably when I was growing up, that was kind of the norm,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then as women got into the workforce, it was like, well, okay, family or work. Well, I want to do both.
Sure.
So you got to take care of everything.
And you have.
Well, to a certain extent. You know, try
I've
to.
Met your daughter. I know you have.
Okay.
So what motivated you to do this book?
I've wanted to do this for a long time. And, you know, being a cancer survivor, it's kind of been on my bucket list. And I love to travel, and the first trip that's in the book was President Obama's first inauguration.
Mm.
And I put it on social media and got such an incredible response from that. I thought every time I take a trip, whether it's work-related or personal, I'm going to blog about it. And the more I did it, the more interaction I got with people. And finally, you know, it got to the point where so many people were saying, you should put all these together. You should write a book. You should put this together in a book. I would buy it. I would read it. It's great to have it all in one place. But I'd never published before. I didn't know how to do that. So until I could find somebody who could help me self-publish,
mm-hmm.
it was just a dream. And I finally did find somebody to help me be an independent publisher.
I've got a question for you.
Hmm.
Why isn't Jose Sanders on Mount Rushmore? One of the places you visited was Mount Rushmore.
It was.
And I know you're good friends.
I am. He is a very dear friend. I've been to see him many, many times.
How's he doing?
He's doing okay. He's had a couple little setbacks.
Yeah.
But he is back to work part-time. He's still anchoring the 7 o'clock news on the U, ABC mm-hmm. 7 in the U. But he's hanging in there. He's a very, very faith. His faith is very important to him, and that helps him get through a lot. That and social media. Again, he puts it out there and gets all of that strength from his followers.
So does that really help? So let me tell you a story.
Okay.
And I will have to tell Laura Miller, a friend of mine in Puerto Vallarta, to listen to this.
Okay.
She announced one day in social media that her sister-in-law and her son had a baby. Very, very premature baby.
Mm.
And very premature. Like a pound and change. That premature. And by the way, wouldn't be telling the story if things
right,
haven't
gone
well.
Right, it has a good ending. Yeah,
yeah. And she received an outpouring, and her son did, on social media. People who had heard about it that didn't even know them. So friends of mine, for example, if I posted it on my Facebook page, Facebook friends, which may or may not be personal friends, right?
Right.
Same
right,
with you.
Right.
People you don't even know were responding and continued to follow this person. Does that tell you about the heart of human beings, for one thing? And does that help the other person, or did it help you?
I think so.
Do you think
so.
It helps Jose?
I think so. Oh, I know it helps Jose. I know it does. He's told me as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was one of those people who was hesitant to get on Facebook because of privacy issues, and just it was kind of scary putting yourself out there.
When you're a public figure, it's
absolutely
complicated
it
at
is.
Times. Yeah.
It can be. But once he did it, and in this case with his illness, it was so comforting to him. And I, you know, I hate to say I told you so, but I said, Jose, I told you so. I did.
I could see you saying that. So let me get back to Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
So I've never been there.
Describe. How could you not have been there?
Describe, I imagine, the enormity of it. Was it emotional?
Very much. You know, I remember driving as we were approaching it, and you can see it in the distance. And as you're approaching it, there's a big forest there. And all of a sudden, you see this peeking up above the trees, and you're getting closer and closer. And I'm snapping pictures, and I've got pictures of it in the distance, and we're getting closer. I've got more pictures of it as we're getting closer. And you just, it's amazing. Once we got there, I must have taken 1,000 pictures of this from every single angle possible, because it is so incredible. The magnitude of this thing, to see it.
Why? So there are lots of travel books that bring you to different places. I think one thing about your book is the variety. So you could buy a travel book about the UK. You could buy a travel book that takes you to where Mount Rushmore is, but not a travel book that covers the wide variety, including places in, as you say, at the heartland. I want to go back to the UK. You met the Queen, apparently.
No, I did not.
Come on.
I did not meet the Queen.
Darn it.
No, but we did go to Buckingham Palace, because when we were there in the summer is when the Queen is on holiday.
Oh.
And that's the only time that they allow the public to tour Buckingham Palace.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't even know that. We got lucky.
Yeah.
That was really, really interesting.
And what was it like?
It was pretty cool. I mean, very... We toured all of the southern UK. We did.
And who is we?
My daughter and I. Sorry about that. I took my daughter Sarah. This was right after she graduated from high school, so it was just the two of us, and that was kind of a graduation gift to do this amazing trip. Had never been there. I mean, we went on Abbey Road. We took pictures on Abbey Road doing the whole Beatles album cover thing. So cool.
What was mom daughter traveling? Good thing. Do you recommend that to people or not so much?
Well,
will this be something that you think and hope she remembers?
How
old is she, so people know?
She's almost 22.
So this will be something she's capable of remembering, but does it enhance the relationship that mom and daughter have, maybe forever?
I would hope so. I think in our case, it definitely does.
Were you kind of pals more than mother and daughter?
A little bit of both. You can't ever be a pal all the time. You have to be a parent. You have to be.
But she's 22.
Still have to look. My mom is still my mom. know, that doesn't change. You're always going to be a parent. But she is a very good traveler because she's my only. We're very close, and I did not want to take any trips without her. I mean, from the time she was one and a half, she's always been on every trip I've taken. So we've been to other countries. She was 4 and a half when we went to Mexico. She's been all over the place. So mm-hmm. she's learned to be a good traveler. She's a wonderful ambassador. I've always taught her that when we travel abroad, not only are you representing kids from Chicago, you're representing kids from the United States.
Is there an ugly American thing?
Absolutely there is.
Tell me about that.
Oh, it's to me, it's very embarrassing when I travel and I see people just being rude. You know, I mean, it is not just Americans. Everybody can do it. Everybody does do it. But I don't want to be one of those rude Americans. So when I travel, I always try to kick it up several notches. And just when I go to another country, I try to learn a few words in that language, even mm-hmm. if I don't speak it, just to be polite, to try to communicate. I'm always on my best behavior.
So you're not like that friend of ours, who I hope doesn't listen to this. I mean, they're nice people. But she did say to me that she hated, I think it was Italy, because no one spoke English. It's like, what do you expect?
Well, when I was in Italy, I was communicating with people in Spanish. Because
it's close.
Well, because people in Europe speak several languages.
That's true, too.
Here, you're lucky if people speak, too.
Is that part of the... I mean, if you could... So you're in charge of the world.
Oh, God.
Would you make it so that young kids are taught another language in school? Young kids.
I think that's...
To teach it by high school is silly, I think.
No, you're right. I think they should. I think that would be so beneficial because the world's a pretty big place.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody speaks English.
So you're clearly a Chicagoan.
Yes, I am.
Absolutely. You say that. Your Chicago sticker is on your sleeve.
Chicago proud.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So when you travel to these places, because I've gotten it, are people asking you about, for me, number one is Oprah Winfrey, as if you know her, although I've met her. I'm sure you've met her, but different than hanging out with her. Or Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan.
Al Capone.
Yep.
If we could still run into him on the street.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I do get that. They ask about Al Capone, they ask about Michael Jordan, and now they ask about gun violence.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Yep. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how do you answer that?
I answer it by saying it's unfortunate, but it's not the entire city. And they are working to make it better.
Yeah.
And there's so many good things about Chicago. I try not to let that override the good things that we have in our city.
What's it like to ride on a camel?
It's pretty cool. It's a little bumpy.
Do you wish we had those so traffic could be better, or maybe that wouldn't help?
No, that only helps because camels don't need to stop for bathroom breaks.
Tell me about where you rode on the camel.
This was on a trip that I took with our congregation, our temple, to Israel. And one day we went into Jordan. And that's where I rode the camel. There's the picture on the back of the book of me on a camel. And the only... I was being so silly. It was like the whole time we were in Jordan and all these people are like, they want you to ride a camel and the price is like ridiculously high because you're Americans and you're tourists and they know they got you. And I was like, all I want to do while I'm here is ride a camel. I got to ride a camel. And I did. I rode a camel. But when we were in Petra, this is the city. The only thing that is left are all of these unbelievable buildings carved into the rock. And in one of the Indiana Jones movies, I think it was the second one, where the temple is, it was filmed in Petra.
Ah.
There's a picture of it in the book.
Yeah.
So you'll recognize it right away and go, that was in Indiana Jones. But that's where they filmed this. But it's the history, the archaeological history of this is amazing. I mean, the whole trip to Israel was amazing. I want to go back.
Well, that's what I'm about to ask you. So the name of the book is On the Road with Roz, Adventures in Life and Travel. And we just don't have time to mention everywhere you've gone. I'm touching on pretty much random places. You have to buy the book.
Right, exactly. I was just going to say.
Yeah. I know how it goes.
Yeah.
But really, you have to buy the book because we can't. We just don't have the time to do it and to tell all of the stories in the book. But I will ask you this. Your favorite place?
That's a really tough question. In this particular book, I can tell you my favorite trip was traveling Route 66.
Mm.
Because we drove it from Chicago to Santa Monica.
Did you sing the song all the way?
I did, and everybody wanted to smack me. Shut up! I did.
What made it your favorite? I mean, you've been to all these exotic places. What made that your favorite?
Because you go through so many different parts of Americana. You see urban, suburban. You see cornfields, you see mountains, you see desert, you see the oil fields. You see so many different things that you don't see here in our area. And the one thing that I found really fascinating was people from Europe come to the United States specifically to drive Route 66 because they feel that they can get a nice little sample of so many different places. Isn't that cool?
I never thought about that. I believe they can, actually. Right. So as you've traveled all over America, are Americans the same if they're in, I don't know how many states you've been to or if you've counted them.
I haven't.
That would be interesting to do. But let's say the number, in this book, I'd say the number is 30. It's probably
possibly,
about that.
Yeah.
So if 30 states, that's a good sampling of America. Might be more. Are people the same in everywhere from one state to another? Or are there differences, regional differences?
You know, the only difference is the accent. People are people.
Mm-hmm.
And in all the places I went to, it's kind of like the golden rule. Do unto others, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm going to treat other people with respect, they're going to treat me with respect. And I didn't run into anybody who I didn't find interesting and fascinating. I'm a reporter, so I ask questions.
Yeah.
When I meet new people, whether I'm a tourist, I just ask questions. I want to learn. And people love to talk about themselves or whatever it is that they're doing, and they'll answer. So I never ran into any rude or obnoxious people on my travels.
The name of the book again, On the Road with Roz, Adventures in Travel and Life. Roz Varon, where do people get the book?
You can get it on Amazon.
Amazon?
Yes.
I believe you can get anything on Amazon. Oh, you know what? I want to ask you this. How can I forget? And we've got a couple of minutes.
Okay.
This is the most important thing.
For you.
It is. You know what I'm about to ask.
I do.
So tell me about your dogs.
Okay. So I do write about my dogs in this book because that's part of the life portion. I love animals. I have dogs. I had two dogs, and both dogs passed away earlier this year, within 4 months of each other.
Was that hard?
It was extremely difficult.
Yeah.
It's like losing a child.
Mm.
They really are my kids. Both of these dogs passed away, but then I got two new dogs. So it's the circle of life. It continues. And having a puppy is like raising a baby.
House training okay now?
Well, yeah. I mean, you can tell, folks. I did call you. I'm like, help!
Yeah. Yeah.
I did need some pointers.
But it did work out.
Yes, it did. It's my little
Lola. So you gave advice earlier with illness. Pet loss is a very difficult thing, as you mentioned. So I'm going to ask you for advice again. Some people wait forever to get that next pet. Some people do it the day after, even. There was one call I had on the radio years ago. And we were talking about pet loss, and this guy calls. I don't know what's on the radio, but I imagine he was 6'72", just a big, big guy. He drove a truck. He sang. He was calling from his truck. And I said, can you give me the toot on the horn? And he does. He goes, you know, from a big truck, right?
Yeah.
And we were, as I said, talking about pet loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, can I help you or why are you calling? He said, I'm about ready now to get another dog as I retire. I'm about to be 65. I'm going to retire. I think I have time, he said, because it's been so difficult getting over the loss of the dog that I had. I said, how long ago was that? He said, 35 years.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Aww.
So, you know, but for him, that was right, perhaps. So there is, I don't believe there's a right or wrong answer to this, but for you.
For me, I needed to get a dog immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first dog, she was only 8, and she had cancer, which was crazy. So then I had my older dog, who was 13, with a heart condition, and I was already preparing for that. So that, you know, the younger one, that just really caught us off guard. And I didn't want my older dog to be alone, so we got an adult dog. She was 3 years old, and she was trained. She was actually a show dog from
Whippets,
right? I have Whippets. From the breeder we had gotten the one who passed away from.
Did that turn out to be a smart thing to do?
Absolutely it did, because she was so good with my older dog in her final months.
Mm-hmm.
Very respectful of her and didn't, you know, I mean, they got along great for those 4 months. And then when my older dog passed, and then I just had Sassy is her name, the three-year-old. I didn't want her to be alone. And so we decided to get a puppy. But we couldn't find, I know I should adopt and get sheltered dogs, but I wanted to get another Whippet because I like this breed.
You love this, and there's nothing wrong with that,
I
don't think.
I mean, thank you. I just want to make sure because I have shelter pets.
You know what? There's nothing wrong, and you did rescue one of these dogs. There's nothing wrong with a pedigree dog, you know, and it's this is a whole different show.
But the
geneticists say we actually need purebred dogs in the pool right now. Otherwise, we're really in trouble with our dogs. We actually need the genes, never mind all the political stuff.
Right. No,
and,
I understand.
And, you know, because you're getting a purebred dog, it doesn't mean that it's your fault someone gave up their dog on the other side of town. I mean, you have the right to do that.
Thank you. So this little puppy, it was very hard to find a litter of Whippet puppies because people breed them to show them, and the only time that they sell them as pets is if they're not good enough to show. So, I mean, we were looking all over the country. We found one. Actually, my breeder friend found a litter in North Carolina. So we ended up flying to North Carolina, getting this little puppy, and then driving back home in one weekend and brought her in. But by that time, we'd had Sassy for like 2 months by herself. So now she's like, well, wait a minute.
What's going on?
You're bringing this puppy in here. But it's all worked out. It's worked out actually pretty well because I post a lot of pictures and videos of these two dogs playing, and they're great. They're great.
Yeah. Well, you could find Roz Varin on her Facebook page. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, you can also buy the book. And it's on Amazon, On the Road with Roz, Adventures in Travel and Life. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Steve, for having me on.